You're listening to the For I Will Be With You podcast. For I Will Be With You. Daily reflections on recovery from the Bible.
Welcome back to For I Will Be With You, the podcast series. My name is Baruch, and I'm an alcoholic. I will be your host. This is the episode for the second week of the year, from January 8th to January 14th, covering Genesis 7:6 to Genesis 9:22. As we make our way through the Pentateuch, the first five books of the Bible, the Torah, we're going to look at selected verses and connect them to concepts of 12-step recovery. This week starts with Genesis 7:6. We're now in the story of Noah and his ark, another famous biblical story, and the story that in some ways prompted me to create this material in the first place. I was, many years ago, was in a meeting, and there was a man sharing who had a pretty religious Christian upbringing, and he told me that he told us, the group, that his Sunday school and religious school meant nothing to him in recovery. And he said, I can't learn anything about recovery from the story of Noah's Ark. And I remember thinking, you know, you probably could learn a lot about recovery from Noah's Ark if you wanted to kind of go beneath the surface. So Genesis 7:6 says, Noah was 600 years old when the flood was water upon the earth. Now, one thing that we get immediately plunged into an issue from a modern perspective, which is that most people we know don't live to be 600 years old anymore. And I think you can interpret it as the world was different in those days, and the people used to live longer. Certainly many people in the book of Genesis lived to be hundreds of years old. The one interpretation is that lifespans have gotten shorter over the years, and we now have the sort of normal human lifespan of whatever, 80 years, 70 years. But in those days, people lived a lot longer. But this number of 600 years old is not accidental. One thing that's important to realize is, if you read the story of Noah completely, is that Noah spent more than 100 years building the ark. And as the Bible also says, the world had become very corrupt and evil in those days. So many, many people, and we can assume many bad people, were standing around watching Noah, this crazy 500 to 600-year-old man, old man, building this enormous boat on dry land. And you can imagine how ridiculous it must have looked to them. Like, what are you doing, Noah? What are you doing? You're building this boat. But Noah didn't let their mockery stop him. He knew what he had to do because God had told him to build this ark. God had told him that he was going to bring a flood. Noah understood the truth of God's word and did not deviate from his plan. And from this, we can learn an important lesson for recovery. You know, others may scoff at our efforts to give up drinking or other addictive behaviors, but we have to dedicate ourselves to our purpose, to understanding that God wants us to overcome our problems. And in a way, the story of Noah's Ark is a metaphor for recovery. We have to build this vessel of recovery, this safe container that will take us away from the corruption of the world that we've been in, or the world we've made for ourselves, and away from people who are negative influence on us in terms of addiction. You have to protect yourself, seal yourself up in this boat that you create, no matter how ridiculous it might seem to the people you know in your life in your time of addiction. So we have to persevere with our program of recovery, regardless of what other people say. That's one of the lessons we can learn from the story of Noah's Ark. Genesis 7:11 says, "In the 600th year of Noah's life, in the second month, on the 17th day of the month, on that day, all the fountains of the great deep burst forth, and the windows of the heavens were open, and the rain was upon the earth 40 days and 40 nights." The commentary tells us that when the rains began, people began pounding on the door to the ark, asking to be let in. Let me just briefly digress into what I mean when I talk about the commentary. There are many, many texts that have been written from a Jewish perspective by notable rabbis over a period of about 2,000 years or more that offer interpretations and explanations of the biblical text that may be difficult to understand if you're just reading at the surface level. So throughout the podcast and in the book, I talk about the commentary or the commentators, which in Hebrew is called the Midrash. And that's where some of these interpretations come from that I'm going to be using to talk about the Bible in recovery. So when I talk about the commentary, I'm talking about this so-called subtext, these other texts that comment on the text of the Bible. So the commentary says that people, because it literally doesn't say in the Bible that people were banging on the door. This is not in the actual text of the Bible. This is commentary to explain. The reason that we take the commentary seriously is that we learned that the commentators were people of tremendous spiritual gift, and that they had an idea of what God's word meant beyond the surface meaning. So we're going to treat it as a truth about the biblical text. So the people were pounding on the door of Noah's ark once it started raining because they realized that maybe this crazy old guy was right. This crazy old guy had been building a boat for 100 years was right, and that there was going to be a flood. But previously they hadn't believed that there'd be a flood. Now, if you're an alcoholic, you might recognize this kind of situation. I know I've been here myself a few times. You've been warned 100 times that your behavior is going to bring terrible problems into your life and the lives of those you love, yet you didn't listen. You kept doing what you were doing, not believing that things could go wrong. Then, when it was too late, you sought help. Addictions cannot exist without this kind of denial. This moment from the story of Noah, when people are pounding on the door of this boat, saying, "Let me in," because they realize, uh-oh, this is really happening. We are going to get washed away in a great flood, which is reminiscent of moments I've certainly had in my life when I felt I was being washed away, or flushed, maybe a better term. Maybe this can help us think the drink through before we pick up a drink, avoid the denial of consequences of our actions. In going back to Genesis 7:11, where it says, "In the 600th year of Noah's life," the commentary says that Noah was 500 years old when he and his wife had children. They waited a long time to have children. They did this at God's suggestion. Why did God make him wait so long? The sages, another term we use to describe these great commentators on the Bible, the Torah sages teach us that Noah had to build the ark himself, personally, with his own hands, for if he did not, the boat would not have embodied enough holiness to make it safe throughout the storm. See, it wasn't just any old boat. The ark was a boat that was made specifically by Noah on God's direction. Noah was a holy person. The boat was infused with his holiness. That's what made it strong enough to withstand the flood. Noah could not have, bought a boat and used it as the ark, or he couldn't have had someone else make a boat. So what the Torah teaches us is that if Noah had children earlier, and then he would have had grandchildren and great-grandchildren and so forth, he would have had to build more than one ark, one for himself and one for his children and his children's children. There wasn't enough time for him to do all this, so he waited to have children. You know, and as alcoholics, we build our own holy space in meetings, in fellowship. This is like our ark. It's the ark we build to save us from the onslaught of addiction and bad people we know in our lives and so forth. In the same way that Noah's personal holy craftsmanship was necessary for making a strong ark, our personal touch is needed to make each AA meeting a place of spirituality and safety from the storm of life. So it needs our, we have to personally attend to these meetings, invest ourselves, same way that Noah made his ark. Genesis 6:16 says, "A window shall you make for the ark, and to a cubit finish it from above." So this is a sort of a design specification of the ark, if you will, a piece of naval architecture. Why does God tell Noah to make a window from above? What he's really talking about is a skylight. Basically, the understanding is that the ark didn't have any windows, but it had sort of a skylight, although some commentators say that it was actually a sort of a special gem or crystal. It was built into the roof that brought in light, sort of magically beams of light lit up the entire interior of this enormous boat from this one place. So the explanation for this, the question comes up is why? Why not have a window? The sages teach that Noah was enough of a righteous man to be saved from the flood, but not righteous enough to be worthy of witnessing the destruction of the world. It's a very interesting concept. I mean, in fact, the section of the Torah that talks about Noah says he was a righteous man in his generation, meaning for the time that he lived, he was immensely righteous. But if he'd lived at another time, he might have been just like a regular guy. So we all have our level of spiritual development. And in God's estimation, Noah was not at a level where he could survive watching the destruction of the world. This is a very important idea in sobriety when we think about it in those terms. Watching traumatic or dangerous things, it can be bad for sobriety. You have to be careful in recovery not to let yourself get exposed to stuff that is too traumatic, because we may not be able to handle it. And there's a reason why, for example, people who do interventions are people who are very, very experienced and are working extremely good programs. For people who get into the lives of really messed up addicts, they have to have the recovery and spiritual resources to handle it. If they can't handle it, it's going to be bad for their programs. And, you know, you can't avoid life's daily stresses, but you should be circumspect about going out of your way to witness and deal with troubling circumstances. Observing and talking about stressful events can damage our sobriety. You want to avoid being voyeuristic about it. Focus on being, you know, you want to be of service to other people, but also take care of yourself. Genesis 8:1. God remembered, and all the beasts and all the animals that were within him. Sorry, let me say that again. God remembered, and all the beasts and all the animals that were with him in the ark. The sages teach that the ark was too small to hold all the animals. There was no way that the animals, Noah and his family, and the food they needed and the ark was on the water for a year. The rain was for 40 days and 40 nights, but the flood lasted for a year. So they had to have enough space on this boat for every animal in the world, two of every animal of this world, seven of each of the holy animals for sacrifices, and all the food they would need, and also room for all the garbage and the waste, if you can imagine what that smelled like, in this one boat. And the truth is, there's absolutely no way the boat was big enough, because the Bible actually gives the measurements of the boat, and it's a pretty big boat. I think it's like 300 feet long, 150 feet wide, or whatever. But there's just no physical way that it would ever have been big enough to carry all this stuff. So you have to understand the story of Noah is the story of at least one miracle. One of the miracles is of course, that this 500-year-old man could build a boat that large on his own, and that all the animals would know to come to it. There's many miracles, but one miracle is that the boat was simply too small, but that somehow through a miracle the boat, either the boat got bigger as the animals got in, or the animals got smaller. Something, there was a sort of a, what a science fiction writer might call like a disruption of the time-space continuum. It happened that everything fit into this boat. So in recovery, this is a wonderful idea for recovery, and I'll share it with you. In recovery, we sometimes feel that we are not up to the great task of sobriety. I know I've had days where I wake up and think, I'm just not doing this today. I can't do it today. I'm not up for it. I'm not strong enough. But what the Torah can tell us here is that we're not alone. If we take the first step, then God can help us the rest of the way, opening us up. God can make us big enough to accommodate the challenges of recovery in life. In the same way that God expanded the ark to accommodate all of its inhabitants. Genesis 9:20 reads, Noah, the man of the earth, debased himself and planted a vineyard. He drank of the wine and became drunk. So in the story of Noah, after the floodwaters recede, and you have the story of the dove going out from the ark and bringing back the olive branch, which is a famous story from the Bible, there is a less famous story, which is that Noah and his family and all the animals came out of the ark onto dry land. And it says the first thing he did was he planted a vineyard and made wine and got drunk. So what we may be reading here is the first recorded alcoholic episode in history. It's a perplexing story, but in a way, if for alcoholics, it probably sounds pretty right. How many of us have trodden the same ground? We're saved from imminent destruction. We're snatched from the jaws of death or deep trouble, and our reaction, how do we handle it? We go out and get drunk again. We debase ourselves. The verse can teach us something about humility. Noah was a great man. He was a righteous man. Yet, he fell prey to the temptation of alcohol because, one interpretation is, he was unable to comprehend the complete destruction of the world. It's not something that many people could handle. The idea that you go through an experience, imagine what this was like, just put ourselves in his shoes for a second. You go through this experience and you come out and everybody who you knew is, and everything you ever knew about was gone, is dead, it's destroyed. The whole world's been destroyed. And he had survivor's guilt, you could imagine. Why was he spared when everyone else was gone? Except for his family, he was all alone. All his friends were dead. Everybody he knew was dead. Everything was gone. So we can be alone with our alcoholism as well as our recovery. We need to remember that recovery is given to us by God one day at a time, and that we are never able to control our compulsions without God's help. Certainly if Noah, someone on that level, could fall prey to the temptation of alcohol, we are all the more vulnerable to it, and traumatic episodes can trigger us. So this verse is helpful. It should remind us that we need to be vigilant and on the lookout for circumstances that can trigger us and send us into drinking. Genesis 9:22 and 23 states, Ham, the father of Canaan, saw his father's nakedness and told his two brothers outside, and Shem and Japheth took a garment and laid it upon their shoulders, and they walked backwards and covered their father's nakedness. Their faces were turned away, and they saw not their father's nakedness. So this is happening right on the heels of Noah getting drunk. He got drunk and he took his clothes off, which I think, unfortunately, maybe some of us can relate to too. I've never actually done that, but I certainly know, I've heard these stories, people get out of control, people black out and they're drinking, They do crazy things, embarrassing things. You know, taking your clothes off and running around is certainly on the menu for many, many of us in the fellowship if we're drinking. So what's happening here is that Noah had three sons and a grandson named Canaan, who was one of the sons of Noah, and Canaan, his son, looked at Noah, who was naked. They were like staring at their father and grandfather running around naked, probably concerned for him, but they were looking at him nonetheless. Now, the other brothers, Shem and Japheth, didn't look. And what they did, you have to kind of imagine what this looked like. They sort of took a blanket, and with their backs turned to their father, they walked backwards to him and wrapped him up in this blanket so that they could cover him up without seeing him. It's kind of a little physical stunt. And Ham's sin was his inability to look away when his father became drunk and undressed. And this is a little bit like an untreated co-addict. An untreated co-addict, a codependent, may act in a similar way, fascinated by the self-destructive behaviors of someone else, but not helping. In contrast, the two other brothers go into action, but they act with compassionate detachment. They help their father, but they do not stare at his nakedness. The AA program of recovery is successful when it motivates the recovering addict to take action. You need to be into action. Thinking is not enough. Action is required to be sober, or if you're faced with temptation, inaction. Being of service is also critical. Helping others stay sober is part of the program. It's also a good way to maintain your own sobriety. And this story gives you a good model of how to maintain yourself. Like the other sections that we just went through, the temptation to be voyeuristic or to be fascinated or turned on or shocked or whatever by what's going on is potentially damaging in spiritual and recovery terms. It's better to maintain some detachment. Now, of course, you have to figure out where you're at. If you're not able to do that, then maybe it's better not to get involved, because you have to keep your own sobriety in focus. Thank you for being with us for this second week, and we hope you'll come back next week for the third week of the year.
You've been listening to the For I Will Be With You podcast. Daily reflections on recovery from the Bible. www.foriwillbewithyou.com